I'm Alexander Heffner, your host on The Open Mind. You're listening to our daily podcast edition of the program. I'm honored to welcome today Jean Guerrero. She is author of Hate Monger, Stephen Miller, Donald Trump, and the White Nationalist Agenda. Welcome, Jean.
Hello, Alex. Great to be here.
Can you tell our listeners what inspired you to write this? And was it at all related to your really important coverage of the border and issues that have arisen since Trump has taken office?
Yes, it was directly a response to that. I mean, I had been covering the immigration issue from day one of the Trump administration before that as well. But I really started to think about, you know, Stephen Miller when I was covering the family separation crisis. You know, I was interviewing all of these parents who were presenting legally at ports of entry, not breaking any laws, you know, no criminal records, and who were being systematically separated from their children. And I was listening to the White House talk about how this was a policy that was meant to enforce law and order, and that they were only breaking up families who broke the law. But, you know, I was at the busiest border crossing in the United States on the front lines, and I knew that that wasn't the case. So for me, it raised the question, well, if this isn't about law and order the way the Trump administration says, then what is it about? What is this anti-immigration crackdown really about? And for that, I felt like I had to really look at Stephen Miller and try to understand what was motivating him and really report on the story of his life. And when I found out that he grew up in Southern California at the same time that I grew up in Southern California, I felt that I could, you know, bring a unique perspective.
What do you think we should most know about the origin of Miller and his hateful ideology?
Well, Stephen Miller is a case study in radicalization. My book is essentially what happens. It's the story of what happens when someone is consumed by an extremist ideology during a young and vulnerable age and ends up the most powerful advisor in the White House. You know, through my reporting for the book, I show how as a teenager, he was indoctrinated by this man named David Horowitz, a former Marxist who became a right-wing radical and who became kind of like a father figure to Stephen Miller when he was going through a difficult time. His family, Stephen Miller's family, had to move from a very affluent part of Santa Monica, California, to a slightly less affluent part because of his father's business dealings in real estate. He was having some trouble and legal issues and bankruptcies. And, you know, Stephen Miller has to go to this public high school, a diverse public high school, and he's feeling displaced. He's feeling lost. He's feeling angry. And you know, David Horowitz comes in and sort of provides him a framework and to understand what he believes is happening to him and gives him somebody to blame. You know, he introduces him to the fantasy that he has to save the United States from certain destruction in the form of too many brown and black people coming to the United States. And this is what ends up, you know, consuming the arc of Stephen Miller's life. I mean, Horowitz helps Stephen Miller get his first jobs in Congress. And, you know, if directly from private correspondence that I obtained for the book, he directly impacted Trump's rhetoric and policies through Stephen Miller. This is a man who believes that the only real racism in the world is racism against white men, and that you know, racism against brown and black people is a figment of your imaginations. And you know, he's played a direct role in shaping and elevating the extremist that we now see in the White House.
Jean, what about bigotry against the Jewish community? Because he represents a sliver of a community that is often fought alongside the civil rights movement and for equality and equal justice under the law. Can you tell us about that contradiction from the familial to ultimately the political?
Yeah, you know, I mean, Stephen Miller is a descendant of Jewish refugees who came to this country fleeing persecution and nationalist agitators in Eastern Europe. And he was you know, brought up to be very familiar with his family history. And in my book, I document how his grandmother on his mother's side, Ruth, she compiled the entire family history in this document that she calls A Precious Legacy. And she says that she's writing it for her grandchildren, you know, like Stephen Miller, in order that they may never forget the value of people who come to this country in nothing but with nothing but the clothes on their backs and you know, speaking no English the way that Stephen Miller's great grandparents did. And, you know, talking about the dangers of demonization and scapegoating. And anyway, these are lessons that Stephen Miller decided to disregard or to completely attack. And you know, his family, for the most part, is very shocked and upset about the direction that he's taken his life. I mean, if the policies that he has been implementing had been, you know, had been in place in the United States when Stephen Miller's ancestors came, then they might not be alive today. And this is a contradiction that Stephen Miller has never, you know, addressed explicitly or directly. But you know, there is, you know, a minority in the Jewish American community who hold these very nationalist, you know, beliefs that Stephen Miller does, including David Horowitz, his mentor, who is also Jewish as well. And, you know, it's a mystery.
Right. So can you tell us if he's estranged from his family now?
Well, he is still close with his parents. And from what I gather, his siblings as well, or at least doesn't have negative relationships with them. But for the most part, you know, most of the family members I spoke to people who say they just don't even talk to Stephen Miller or Stephen Miller's parents anymore because of the fact that Stephen Miller's parents support him. And, you know, I spoke to one of his aunts who says that Stephen Miller should be tried for crimes against humanity. She feels that her, you know, nephew has opened a Pandora's box of hatred that is going to be very difficult to close. And, you know, it really worries her. And, you know, one of his uncles published an op-ed in Politico talking about how he's an immigration hypocrite. For the most part, Stephen Miller is estranged from a majority of his family members because he grew up in a family that was mostly very pro-immigration. I mean, they donated to immigration organizations. They really believed in the cause of bringing, you know, helping people who need a better life to come here and make something of themselves.
And with respect to that identity, it doesn't seem like he's really ever been probed and had to rationalize or contextualize his current politics with the reality of the anti-refugee, anti-immigrant sentiment that was directed at the Jewish American population and Jews around the world in what was the Lindbergh movement, the America First movement originally. Were you able to track any examples where Miller was forced to reconcile with this or forced to kind of reconcile with the impact he's had, or is it in fact his intention to exacerbate the bigotry and hatred and, like you say in the book, in the title, to be the hate monger?
Well, he's definitely deliberately inciting hatred and in using hatred. You know, it's something that David Horowitz, in a strategy paper that I obtained, you know, told Stephen Miller he talks about the political utility of hostile emotions, citing hatred, but primarily fear, and the importance of demonization and you know, remaking the Republican Party around this notion of painting opponents as enemies and true embodiments of evil. And, you know, I've never heard him or spoken to anyone who has heard him try to reconcile his Jewish beliefs with what he's doing. I mean, he's directly pulling from white supremacist and white nationalist literature that vilifies Jewish people and, wants to commit acts of violence against Jewish people. And he pulls from this literature anyway. I mean, if you look at the websites that he has been promoting on Breitbart for years, these are neo-Nazi websites that, you know, that talk about how Jewish people need to not, you know, be here. And Stephen Miller, for some reason, is promoting these websites.
Well, and combine that with the pandemic and an opportunity to further scapegoat minority communities. This is like a wet dream for him. You report on hate being the elemental to his existence, really. Can you just expound on that in terms of, you know, the hate is the philosophy by which, or the political tactics by which, he writes Trump speeches and he wrote Jeff Sessions speeches. I mean, in a sense, Trump has given him a laboratory to amplify hatred more than any that he had ever had prior. And it went from being a rather niche community of hate to globalized hate.
Right, exactly. And I mean, the way that he uses hatred, I mean, in his rhetoric, I can boil it down to, you know, Stephen Miller is responsible for Trump's most incendiary rhetoric. You know, lately it's been manifesting as terms like far left fascism and unhinged left wing mob, creating this sense that the Democratic Party, wants to destroy America. And previously and still, you know, still Stephen Miller is responsible for inserting really gory examples, very vivid descriptions of alleged migrant crimes in order to incite hatred and fear about migrants. So for example, you know, talking about having Trump talk about migrants slaughtering little girls or chopping people up with machetes or taking a hammer and crushing a woman's eye sockets in her sleep, you know, just really morbid stuff that Stephen Miller has been, you know, really into and exposed to through his readings of white supremacist literature that tries to paint Black and brown people as innately more violent than white people. So he's pulling these things from his readings of neo-Nazi literature and inserting them into Trump's speeches. And the other thing is, you know, this entire idea that the Democratic Party poses an existential threat to civilization is also rooted in the white supremacist idea that any allies of people of color, so anti-racists specifically, you know, that they also pose an existential threat to civilization. And this is essentially the re-election strategy of 2020. I mean, you see Trump cracking down on anti-racist protests in Democrat run cities and saying that it's about law and order, but you know, this is because Stephen Miller has been taught from a very young age to launder white supremacist ideas in the language of national security, in the language of law and order, in the language of, you know, economics, national identity, heritage, in order to make these white supremacist ideas palatable to the mainstream, to people who don't consider themselves to be racist. But of course, it goes far beyond the rhetoric as well. I mean, the entire anti-immigration agenda is something that Stephen Miller is pulling from think tanks that were created by eugenicists. These are people who believe in race-based pseudoscience, in the genetic superiority of whites. They believe in population control for non-white people. And Miller pulled his immigration policies from these think tanks, you know, really focused on targeting families, people who might reproduce in the United States, you know, asylum seekers, refugees, you know, just suspending green card access. Like it's not about criminals and cartels, even though Trump likes to say that. It's about re-engineering the demographic flows into this country to keep brown and Black people out. And, you know, this has had broad homeland security consequences, regardless of whether you care about immigration. I mean, Stephen Miller is a public relations flack who had no policy experience and at the age of 31 was put in charge of making policies for this country. And from day one, narrowed the focus of the Department of Homeland Security, which is supposed to protect the American people from everything from, you know, terrorism to cyber warfare to pandemics, into something that was laser focused on keeping out brown and black families.
Ultimately, the effect has been mainstreaming that kind of thinking and political behavior in the Republican Party. This is Miller's party as much as it is Trump's. Does he have a long-term plan for Trump, or do you think that it's his landing where he did in the Trump orbit was largely a result of Trump himself and his rhetoric? And do you get a sense whether he views this as a defining moment that will guide the future of our politics, or does he have an understanding that this kind of nativism and bigotry, which is in many respects on the ballot this fall, you know, it may be facing its you know, its defeat. What is the outlook that you could surmise from him at this point on whether he sees this as a takeover of America, or he sees it as a single movement that or single campaign that is not going to ultimately stand the test of time here?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know if Stephen Miller believes that this is ultimately going to work. I do think that he absolutely wants and believes that it should work, and that he is a true fanatic. I mean, he's an ideologue. He, more than anyone else in the White House, actually believes in the anti-immigration agenda as something that is going to, you know, quote unquote, save the United States, because of the fact that he was indoctrinated in these ideas at such a young age. So I think that he thinks he's doing something for the betterment of the United States. And the damage that he's done to the refugee and asylum system is going to have long-term consequences, regardless of what happens in November. So even if, you know, someone else comes in with a completely, you know, if Biden wins and they try to reverse everything that Stephen Miller did, it's going to take a very long time to recover these systems, because, you know, the refugee admissions infrastructure it was easy to destroy, but it's not going to be easy to rebuild. I mean, these are entire offices and employees that need to be, you know, rehired and re-established. And also the United States used to have this reputation internationally as a beacon of hope and refuge for people fleeing violence and persecution. And, you know, Stephen Miller deliberately destroyed that reputation. And that's another thing that is going to take a very long time to rebuild.
In a sense, Gene, do you think that he has indoctrinated the party as much as Horowitz indoctrinated him? Folks who were rank and file Republicans are now indoctrinated by him.
You know, that's a great question. And I think that in a sense, yes, he, you know, at the very, I mean, there's people who are starting to believe this and have become, you know, fanatics like Stephen Miller on the right. But I think there's also people who have just, you know, who are opportunists like Donald Trump, and they see the political utility of, you know, scapegoating and demonization and building an entire careers around, you know, hate mongering. So whether they are true fanatics or not, I mean, the Republican Party has absolutely been remade in the image of Stephen Miller's extremist fantasies. And this goes to, you know, his alliances with right-wing media. I mean, for years, for his entire life, he's been really great at cultivating relationships with media provocateurs like, you know, Rush Limbaugh and Tucker Carlson and Ann Coulter, and using these so that he's not just a man acting alone in the White House, but he is, you know, he's got an entire infrastructure of right-wing media that is helping him to, you know, push white supremacist propaganda onto the American population, laundered through these other narratives that make it palatable to the mainstream.
I think you say that so correctly, because that is what he did. It is no longer implicit. We talk about dog whistles and race baiting. Those are not really the way to acknowledge the bigotry that has been amplified. When it is explicit and deliberate, intentional, and that is what he is responsible for, from the sort of closeted sexism, nativism, xenophobia, to these are the marching orders. Did you find that there were people either in this administration or in Congress who were uncomfortable with working for or with him?
Yeah, you know, when he was on Capitol Hill working for Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions, I spoke to a number of Republicans who were aides for Republican senators, and they told me that they were very uncomfortable all the time just being in the same room with him, because they felt that if they said anything, you know, that Stephen Miller didn't like about, you know, a compromise on immigration or the benefits of immigrants to this society, that he was going to take their remarks and give them to Breitbart, which is a right-wing website that he is another one of his allies, you know, that he was constantly pushing white nationalist and white supremacist articles into and having writers write about them. And he was also, you know, he would push memos that smeared, you know, senators that were for immigration compromise. So for a long time, you know, Stephen Miller was, he made people very uncomfortable on the Hill. I mean, there was a time when he was there that the Republican Party was trying to remake itself in a more diverse and inclusive direction. I mean, they lost in 2012. They wrote an autopsy report that the Republican Party had to start campaigning with minority communities in a way that it never had before. It was a real reckoning in the Republican Party. And Stephen Miller was pushing it in the completely opposite direction. He was reading this research about the missing white voter in 2012 and decided that they were going to double and triple down on appealing to the white, specifically white working class, by appealing to white fears and using the demonization strategies that David Horowitz taught him. And, you know, for a while he was seen as kind of a fringe figure. They thought he was just so out there and so extreme that he could never, I mean, he was scary to people, but people didn't think he could, you know, actually remake America, American government. And ultimately, you know, you see him doing that.
You see him remaking the American government, but what about uncomfortable working with him in this White House? You know, it was clear from the beginning of the inauguration and the transition that some of the Republican strategists or policy thinkers were not going to be participating in this administration. But once we got into the White House and you had the Muslim ban and the incarceration of asylum seekers, once that all transpired in his White House capacity, who has he fought most directly with, or who kind of refused to engage with him in that realm?
Right. That's a great question, because it's part of how, you know, Stephen Miller has been able to stick around and have such an impact on White House policy, is that, you know, White House officials told me that they were always afraid to question Stephen Miller or to challenge him, because every time that Stephen Miller was in the room, he was invoking Donald Trump's name or his desires or his demands. So he was constantly channeling Trump in a way that felt frightening to people and, you know, allowed him to essentially completely bypass the bureaucracy and normal operating procedure around policymaking in order to push his white nationalist agenda through. And he reaches deep into the bowels of the Department of Homeland Security, calls people far, far beneath him and tells them to do things and, you know, just completely, I mean, from the very beginning, I mean, I was talking to his predecessor, from the Obama administration who met him briefly in January of 2017 during a transition disaster exercise where Obama's former Homeland Security advisor was going over how to respond to various disasters that America might face. And one of them was a pandemic. And, you know, Stephen Miller was just kind of going through his phone, not really paying attention. And Cecilia Munoz turns to him and asks him if there's anything that she can help him with. You know, she's worried that they might not know how to respond in the event of a disaster. And he immediately says, yes, I want to know, how do I make sure that I'm the person in charge of the immigration issue without the interference of the National Security Council? So he was essentially asking how to bypass, you know, national security experts, which, you know, Cecilia Munoz told him, you need these people at the table in order to protect the American people. You need as much expertise as possible. And she says he just kind of chuckled. And this is how Stephen Miller approached his position at the White House, you know, from day one. And it made a lot of people uncomfortable. I mean, anyone who disagreed with him got pushed out or, you know, reassigned. You see most of the top positions at the Department of Homeland Security are currently vacant or held by people in an acting capacity, you know, essentially puppets for Stephen Miller.
And just quickly, tell us about his relationship with Kushner.
Yeah, so Stephen Miller understood from early on that family is very important to Donald Trump in a way. I mean, especially Ivanka, and that if he wants to stick around in the White House, he needs to manage those relationships carefully. So Stephen Miller and Jared Kushner do not see eye to eye on the immigration issue. Kushner is a lot more moderate, you know, likes, you know, bringing people in on work visas, sees the value of bringing in immigrants for a variety of different, you know, things. And then also he believes in like merit-based immigration, whereas Stephen Miller wants to see immigration slashed to zero. And the only reason we haven't seen it slashed to zero is because he understands the importance of managing his relationship with Jared Kushner, who is the other very powerful advisor in the White House. And, you know, so Stephen Miller has a positive relationship with Kushner and Ivanka and especially with Donald Trump. And this, you know, this is part of the reason he's been able to survive for so long. And, you know, despite, you know, the power of Kushner, Stephen Miller is the one who always pushes Donald Trump in the most aggressive direction.
Yeah, he does seem to call the shots. Jean Guerrero. Yes. Appreciate your insight today. Author of Hate Monger, Stephen Miller, Donald Trump, and the White Nationalist Agenda. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.